We have all kinds of ways to get in touch with each other these days. Just with a smartphone, you've got the phone, texting, and email available, and that's before connecting online through apps or social media. Yet people report feeling more lonely despite it all. Our guest this hour has some stories of his own to share in that vein. Dan Schauble tells his own tale and explores how to get people better connected, really connected, at work in a book called Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. Dan Schauble is a partner and the research director at Future Work. Place. His previous books are about building a personal brand using social media. Their titles, Me 2.0 and Promote Yourself. Dan Schauble, thanks for joining us.
So happy to be here with you.
So it's clear up front that you see plenty of utility in social media, but it sounds like it does have its limits.
Yeah, early in my career, I used social media, namely Facebook and LinkedIn, in order to craft a really strong network. For me as an introvert, it was like a quick digital handshake. But it wasn't until later where I realized that I felt isolated and lonely, and I had to take those digital relationships offline through phone calls and meeting people in person all over the country. And so I think that technology can be a bridge to human interaction. Don't let it be a barrier. Don't let, you know, yourself constantly look at these devices and not at other people. Don't use technology for its convenience and addiction to let it keep you from the real interactions that we need to survive and be productive at work.
So voice-to-voice, face-to-face, better than just text-to-text.
Yeah, we tap our devices over 2,600 times a day. We look at our phones every 12 minutes. During a business meeting, we send an average of 5 text messages. It's just gotten so out of hand. And, you know, a lot of people would think that this is a generational dilemma. Young people are just overusing it and older people are not. And I call my mom more than she calls me. She texts way more than she picks up the phone now. And so I think it's affecting everyone, regardless of age, gender, location. I mean, I studied 10 different countries for the book. I did a study with Virgin Pulse of over 2,000 managers and employees. And yeah, and I mean, people are affected in many ways. About half of our workday is consumed using this technology. And I think technology can make us more productive. It can eliminate the tasks that we don't even want to do. But if we're using technology the right way, it's getting us to that meeting, that networking event, the birthday party, the conference. But when we're actually there, if we're still using the technology and looking down instead of forward, then there's no point in even going in the first place.
You know, one of the things about this, you mentioned your mother texting more than that she answers the phone, is how quickly we adapt to technology now. I'm always struck by penetration rates for various types of technology. My recollection is that it took decades for radio to reach every American household, and yet with cell phones, it was very fast, wasn't it?
Yeah, now people are adjusting to podcasts, they're looking at YouTube videos, and then, you know, they talk into Alexa and Siri, right? And so technology in a sense is the convenience and addiction that it's brought has made people lazier, right? People are headline readers now. And I think that can be dangerous because, you know, if you don't take the time to really learn and think and you just want the information to come to you, I mean, what is studying for a test anymore? You know, it's all Googling, you know, there's no memorization. And so I think it's kind of dumbed us down at some level. But it's also, you know, it's given us the illusion of connection and productivity. We think we're highly connected, but sometimes we're distracted. We think we have a lot of friends, Facebook friends, but someone with an average of 150 Facebook friends only has 4 they can actually rely on at a time of emotional crisis. So if you're in the hospital, only 4 will pick up the phone or visit you. So it's really deceived us in that way. But I think we can use technology to empower us to forge stronger connections, to keep in touch with people, and to instill meaning at work and at home.
Well, so this is a really interesting thing because your own research at Future Workplace reveals a divide. I mean, people say they prefer in-person communication, but do they seek it out?
Yeah, this is really interesting. What we want is different than how we behave. So people, regardless of age, want, besides teenagers, actually teenagers would rather text than have a face-to-face conversation. And that's the first time that we've ever seen that result. So that's kind of scary, and that'll change things when they head into the workplace soon. But for the most part, people want in-person meetings. They want to work in a physical office. They desire the human contact. Yet they're spending 30% of their personal and professional time on Facebook. And that's just Facebook. That doesn't include Instagram, LinkedIn. It doesn't include email or texting. So once you add up all of that, it's about half of someone's day. And you know, if you're using technology that much, if you're sending so many emails, Are you really getting a point across? Are you really creating mutual understanding? Are you really establishing really genuine human connections with people? And I would argue that you might not be. And it could be isolating you, which makes you feel more lonely. And loneliness is a huge epidemic in the United States. Half of Americans are lonely. There's a study by Cigna of 20,000 adults, and that's what they found. And 40% lack meaningful relationships.
Wow, that's a high number. So is this book for them, or is this book for the people who manage them?
Originally, the focus was on the new manager who felt lonely and isolated and wanted to create a more human and connected workplace. But now, just based on feedback and how people are viewing it, it's really for anyone trying to establish a healthier, more successful life, because there are five things that are constant in society. You're born, you die, you pay taxes. There's 24 hours in a day. And Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, after safety, security, food, and shelter, we need love and friendships. Otherwise, we'll never be self-actualized. We'll never be able to live our full potential at work and at home. And now work and personal lives are blended through technology. So if you have a bad work day, you're taking that home. If you have a bad time with your family, you get into a fight with your spouse, for instance, you're taking that into the workplace. So we have to account for that and give people flexibility and show empathy as leaders and teammates.
All kinds of things we need to think about as we approach each other at work in an age where we don't always approach each other at work in person. And it's a good idea we're hearing from Dan Schauble, who's the author of Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. It's a conversation you're more than welcome to join. We'll pick up phone calls and emails on the other side of a break. We'll take one now. This is the Jefferson Exchange. Back with Dan Schauble and Back to Human in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about connecting with other human beings in the world today. We have all these electronic ways of getting a hold of each other, and we're talking to friends from high school on a regular basis through Facebook and stuff like that, but we report feeling lonely. About half of Americans report feeling lonely, Dan Schauble tells us from a number of surveys. He's written a book to encourage people to get back closer to each other and develop meaningful connections in the workplace. His book is called Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. Conversation you're welcome to join at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And Dan, you do provide some tools in the book. You start off with the Work Connectivity Index. What is that?
Yeah, I worked with Professor Kevin Rockman of George Mason University School of Business, and it measures the strength of your work relationships. So you take it with your teammates, and it measures you from, you know, poor or low connectivity to high connectivity. And it's a lot of factors, including, you know, how close you are in terms of proximity and your feelings towards, you know, the people you work with. And so if you get low scores, it means, hey, you got to start to create a more socialized work environment. You want to pick up the phone more, have more in-person meetings, and it really is trying to encourage more human interaction, and you can take it at workconnectivityindex.com for free.
Which I did, I should point out, and I was a little surprised, particularly after I filled in the boxes that said I'm highly satisfied with my life, that I got poor connectivity. I did wonder, though, if that's because, since I'm ostensibly the boss in the newsroom, if I receive the venting rather than feel like I can give it.
Now, the next question would be, okay, what are you going to do about it? You have a low connectivity score. What about, you know, the people you work with, do they have higher scores? Do they have the same score? And then, you know, what can you do to maybe increase that interaction? Maybe have a, you know, a dinner every Friday night with everyone or Thursday. Like, what can you do to kind of reach out and make sure that you're getting at least one or more additional touch points in a given week? Because that's what this is all about, touch points, right? It's like every time you compliment someone, every time, you know, you recognize them, every time you share something and teach someone a new skill, every time, you know, you do throw an office birthday party or do a workation or a team building activity. These are all touch points, and they all add up to creating a more socially engaged workplace. And the reason why you would want to do that as a business is because it increases retention, and every time you lose an employee, it can cost, you know, at least $10,000 to replace them. So the cost of losing an employee is very great, and you can limit that cost and increase retention by having deeper relationships. It's much easier for people to quit their job when they only had a bunch of acquaintances rather than friends, especially best friends. And the research I did for this book, as well as research from Gallup on vital friends, proved that, right? And 7% of the global workforce has zero friends at work. Half have five or fewer. Yet we're spending so much time at work and interacting with our colleagues. Not having your phone is a new vacation. It's 47 hours a week. On average, people are working every week and outside of office hours, on weekends, we're still working. And so if you don't like who you work with or they don't treat you right, that's going to have a huge impact, not just on work, but your whole life, because we spend a third of our lives working.
Yeah, that's a great point that we're there that much. So we certainly need to get along with those people and strive for better communications. So I should point out the book is divided into three major parts. Part one, master self-connection. Part two, create team connection. Part three, build organization connection. So right up front in the first chapter, first paragraph, you mentioned Pelican Bay Prison, which is in our listening area, and point out how bad isolation can be for human beings.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing, to be honest, but I think it's just using an example to show the importance of human connection and the lack thereof and what that can do to your brain and health, right? Like, we need each other to survive. It's not just that example, but countless studies to prove that. And the more we get away from the human interactions that we really, really, truly desire, whether we admit it or not, the worse it is for us, personally and professionally. And that's why I encourage people to at least be more conscious. Like, I look at the book cover, it has a name tag on it, you know, back to human, and the human is in a name tag. And the reason is that it's like a reminder, hey, you know, you're using a lot of technology, we all do, but remember, you're still human, and we still have these basic needs to connect, and so don't let the technology distract you from that.
Dan Chubble, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is called Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. Let's go a little further into these mechanisms, though. And with all those friends on Facebook, for example, why do we feel disconnected? What are we not getting from the electronic connection, even if we're sending what we think are meaningful messages to people?
Facebook has tricked us into thinking we have an abundance of friends, but a lot of these people might be a first date. It might be someone you meet at a conference who you'll never talk about again. You'll never talk to these people again. So I don't count them as actual friends. And so even though you might think you have an abundance of friends, you don't. And just because, you know, it's not about numbers, right? Everyone's like, oh, we have hundreds of Facebook friends. Like, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, who are your real friends? And after the age of 25, you start losing friends more rapidly, especially men who are less likely to express their emotions and go deep with their peer group. Rather than women who are naturally more emotional. And so it's a huge issue, because when you start with friends, if you don't prioritize friendships, then you become more lonely when you're older, and that affects your health and well-being.
So you did mention Maslow's hierarchy of needs a bit earlier, and you say as we get into the workplace and realize we need to make some connections with people, that we need to focus on our own fulfillment first. Like how?
If you're not fulfilled, if you don't know what your values are, what your purpose is, if you don't, you know, have a direction to go in, you're not going to be able to inspire other people. You're going, even if you try and help your teammates, in the back of your head, you're selfishly trying to figure yourself out and how you can benefit from those situations. So I know, because I'm extremely fulfilled in my personal professional life, that it's so much easier for me to be giving and being generous and support other people and help them accomplish their goals, because I'm already taken care of. I have nothing to worry about. I'm not, you know, it's not like life is easy, but I know the direction I'm going in. I want to do this for the rest of my life. I'm basically set psychologically. And because of that, I can go to other people and inspire them through my passion, through my vision of what I've done for myself. You know, it's the reason why, you know, people who are self-help gurus or authors, they're able to help people, is because they've already built a company. They've already achieved a lot of their success so that they can inspire other people with their story. You know, for me, it's a story of, you know, getting every book has been rejected by every publisher besides one, and I kept going. You know, Some of my companies, you know, weren't doing well, and then I turned them around. You know, even when I graduated school, getting my first job took 8 months and 15 interviews for just one company for three different jobs. Yet I had the best resume out of anyone in my class. So, like, nothing's ever come easy. And because of that, and I've learned more about myself through every situation, it's much easier for me to help others get past their obstacles because I've figured myself out and I've been through enough that I understand what it takes to achieve something.
Dan, when you talk about in the book about embracing work-life integration, what do you mean?
Yeah, I think balance doesn't exist. Everyone's like, oh, work-life balance. That means there's a trade-off and you can never be in perfect balance. It's just, it's not like you're going to look at your watch every minute and say, oh, well, I got to add one more time for my personal life. Like, it doesn't work like that. So Jeff Bezos says it's work-life harmony. The former CEO of Campbell Soup, who I interviewed, said it's work-life integration. I've said work-life integration for a while. It's think about your personal professional life and then make your calendar reflect that. So if we live and die by the calendar, if it's not on our calendar, it doesn't exist, we say this to ourselves all the time, then why wouldn't we put more personal related activities on our calendars? Like, I always get made fun of. I'm like, you know, Dan, like, why do you put that you're going out to dinner with us in the calendar and you're inviting us? It's because I want to ensure that the calendar forces me or makes me accountable for doing personal related activities, because over 70% of the global workforce doesn't have enough time to do personal related activities, and that hurts their whole life and makes them more burned out and unhappy. So I think that we need to look at our calendars from not just a professional lens, but a personal one.
So if you're going to put meetings on the calendar, you should also put down dates and dinners and things that you're doing outside.
15-minute phone call with your parents. Mm-hmm. Something as simple as that can really make a big difference to you.
Dan Schauble is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. As we've already talked about, even though we have all these ways to get a hold of each other these days, more people talk about feeling lonely. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 with your thoughts on the subject matter and perhaps your own feelings about it. Join us at, again, 800-838-3760 by phone. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. And here's an email from Becca in Ling County. She writes, my sister works for a very small company. I always worked for large ones. I loved having lots of friends and almost friends to hang out with, badmouth managers, walk at lunch, etc. In a small company, there's less chance for these things. It's too close for easy relationships. So says Becca in Ling County. What do you think about that?
You know, I think there are some differences between big and small companies. We work with a lot of big companies. My career is with big companies too. But it really comes down to this. It comes down to having leaders that you can trust, where you have a sense of belonging, where you genuinely feel happy about coming to work, and there's a sense of purpose for the work you do and how it impacts others around you, whether those you work with, customers, or the world as a whole. And so when you focus on those four employee engagement factors, when your leadership is completely, you know, supportive of everyone, then the culture enables people to be more social. Nothing is forced when that happens. And so it's really about working for the right company and the right leadership. And that's why I wrote the book, is to get leaders on board with, you know, the Back to Human movement. So they're really consciously thinking about the relationships and culture that they create within their companies, because then a lot of this stuff becomes easy. It happens naturally, you know, for people to share what they know. And, you know, in chapter three, you know, practice shared learning. It's easy because the leader's already practicing that. You know what I mean? So everyone looks to the leader for what to do, and they mirror the leader in some respect. And so if leaders are able to step up and create more of a safe space for employees, then employees will be able to bring their full self into the workplace, which is what they want to do, and establish real, genuine relationships, because that's the best way to bring happiness and joy and connection in the workplace, is for people to just be themselves.
Well, and you were talking about learning just now, and shared learning comes up big in this first part of the book. I mean, what advantages do coworkers get from learning things together?
In order to keep up with the speed of business, we have to share what we know with each other and support each other's learning and development. The average relevancy of a learned skill is 5 years. Things are moving really fast. I mean, look what's happening with artificial intelligence and automation. We don't know how it's going to completely play out, but, you know, humans and robots are going to have to work side by side, and then people are going to have to, you know, continually learn and be lifelong learners instead of you know, working day to day, hoping things work out. Like that doesn't, that one's not going to happen. And so the philosophy is when I learn, I share in the book. And that means when you learn something new, whether it's, you know, you watch a TED talk or you read a white paper or you just know a skill very well, you know how to edit in Photoshop, something simple as that. And you know one of your teammates would benefit from that skill or that video or that white paper or that article, send it to them immediately. And then you get in this habit where you're constantly consuming information. Me, every morning, I wake up and I read for an hour about everything that's going on in my industry. And throughout the rest of the day, I'm able to share articles and clips and all these different resources with the people who will most benefit from them, whether it's customers, partners, employees from my company, or friends. And so I think that the best way to be a good shared learner is you yourself learning and reading as much as you can and getting to a habit of doing it. For me, it's 7 days a week. And then everyone's able to get better together. And when this comes from the leader, other people will want to constantly share as well.
And you see a real opportunity here, clearly, for people to grow relationships across generations through the process of sharing skills. Elaborate on that a bit.
Yeah, it's about mentoring. It's about knowledge transfer. You know, 10,000 people are of retirement age every single day. So we're going to eventually, you know, people are working longer and living longer. Those are factors. Eventually, we're going to have a ton of people retiring. And all that knowledge will be lost unless we pass down knowledge from one generation to the next. It's like a civil duty, to be honest. It's extremely important, not just for companies, but for society as a whole. But I think young people can teach older people things too, a new way, you know, a fresh outlook, how to use the technology in a purposeful way. And I think once we all come together and support each other's learning and development across generations and genders and ethnic backgrounds and geographies, you know, creates a better, healthier, more engaged workforce as a result.
There's a whole chapter in here, Dan, on optimizing productivity. It seems very tech-reliant. So what would you say are some signs that we are too tech-reliant?
Yeah, if you find yourself constantly emailing instead of having a one-on-one conversation, that's a huge problem. So the biggest thing in the study that we found was that email gets in the way of face-to-face communication more than anything else. Yet a study in the Harvard Business Review found that one face-to-face conversation is more successful than 34 emails exchanged back and forth. So you can actually make yourself less productive if you constantly are using the technology. And so anytime you think that someone doesn't understand what you mean in an email as you're writing it, or that you're sending too many emails to try and clarify, it's a big signal that you should walk over to their desk or pick up the phone.
I notice you counsel people to stop multitasking.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. So we think that there's such a thing as multitasking. I think it's because secretly people think that multitasking is some sort of superpower, right? They're like, you know, in a Marvel movie and they're able to do so many things at once. And it's not true. Your brain keeps shifting between tasks and you become less productive. That's why the world is so cluttered right now. There's so much, as you know, in the media, there's so many, you know, podcasts and radio shows and articles and so much going on. So it's really a skill now to be focused. And if you can be focused, you can accomplish a lot more. Even in meetings, if you're focused and attentive and not using the technology, you're going to have a lot more to say after people talk.
We move into part two of Back to Human, and it's called Create Team Connection, and you recommend promoting diverse ideas. This does seem, at least in my experience, to bedevil some managers. They talk about wanting to encourage all sorts of ideas, but when you bring up something off the wall at a meeting, it's like, oh, no, that won't work. So how do you counsel people to promote ideas and not use that knee-jerk and knock them down?
The way I look at it is to create a strong relationship, you need shared values, right? So you got to believe in the same thing. But people who look and believe in things that are different, right? A different set of opinions, come from different backgrounds, because then that challenges you to be more creative and to get in healthy arguments where new ideas and innovation come from. So I think that, especially in today's world, like everyone, you know, diversity is one of the hottest topics in society, no question, especially in at work. But younger generations are naturally more diverse. They're just so much more diverse. Every generation now will have a higher percentage of African Americans, Latinos, because that's what's happening in the population or as a whole. And so embracing diversity every single year is just going to become more important. And we have to see it as a good thing, because with diverse ideas, we are challenged. And through those challenges lie the greatest opportunities.
And you point out the enemy of diverse ideas. We're not talking about necessarily a diversity in population, but diverse ideas is groupthink. And there are lots of good examples of that. One of many things we can talk about with Dan Schauble when we come back to his book, Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. We'll come back and talk more to Dan about the book. You can join the conversation. We've had a couple of emails already, and we'll have a few more, I'm confident. 800-838-3760 by phone. The emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Dan Schauble, Back to Human, and you in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dan Schauble. He is the author of a book called Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. Dan is a partner and the research director at a place called Future Workplace. So the book is largely looking at how we can create better connections with the people we work with in an age when we seem to communicate electronically almost exclusively at times, and to the detriment of our feelings, because we talk about feeling lonely. Half of us talk about this in various surveys we've cited already. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about making greater connections, particularly in the workplace. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We were just talking about the diversity of ideas. There's diversity of people as well, which is optimum in the workplace, but diversity of ideas too. And you talk about the enemy of diverse ideas being groupthink. There are lots of good examples of groupthink, aren't there, Dan?
Yeah, groupthink is when people act and behave and think the same, right? And so if you have everyone who has the same mindset, maybe came from the same school and the same background, ideas are not going to be challenged, and you're going to push things forward that might not be in anyone's best interest, that you just might not know it when you come together and think of that idea.
All right, so we've been talking about technology and how it gets in the way, but then there's a part in part two of the book about creating team connection where you talk about using technology to intentionally drive human interactions. Like how?
Yeah, I think that you can use a calendar, you can use a chatbot and other technologies to remove the work you don't want to do, and then create more in-person situations where you can actually get to know someone. You know, I think technology can be used to, for instance, if your teammate is going to be late for a meeting, to text them saying, hey, you know, remember we're in conference room 13B. But if you get into an argument with a teammate, texting is not going to solve an emotional issue. It's going to actually make it worse. And it's like it actually just happened to me the other day. My friend was, you know, upset for some reason, and he was trying to express himself through text. And I just said, hey, like, let's just meet up and talk about it, because I not only am I practicing what I say in the book, but I don't think issues like that can be solved successfully using text.
Was the issue resolved, or at least come to a better place when you guys got together physically?
Yeah, and then I made him take pictures of me with my book at Barnes & Noble. So that
How did that help?
No, I'm totally joking. Okay. I think he dropped it because he realized it wasn't a big problem. And he realized that what really matters is how we interact in person anyways.
Let's take a phone call here. We have Vince in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dan Schauble, the author of Back to Human. Hi, Vince.
Quick question. I'm a 67-year-old that just went back to work 2 years after retiring at a local mall to do seasonal work for a large department store. And I was just amazed that the 2 days of training their idea of training was to plunk you down in front of a computer to do some lessons, and there was no interaction among the people. And I come from an educational training background. And even during the break, when I hoped to be able to interact with some of the other people, most of them quite a bit younger than me, they all ran to the break room to get on their phones to start texting and calling people. And when I tried to engage a few of the people during the break times, it was like they couldn't even make eye contact with me. They couldn't divert their eyes from the screens, and seemed to be having a great deal of trouble to socialize, looking down at the screen, even when they were trying to hold a conversation with me. And I was just wondering if that's going to be a problem, you know, for the people who are just so focused on the technology and their screen time.
Oh, that's really interesting, Vince. Thanks for sharing that perspective. I appreciate it. So, Dan, what do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a big problem, because not only are people addicted and technology is the default way of communicating, but a lot of companies are using the technology to scale training because it might be cheaper, more effective, and you're able to reach more people. But I don't think that's how most people learn. I think most people learn maybe in a classroom setting where you're talking with your classmates, or you get personalized attention from the teacher. So I think that we need a mixed learning, multi-learning options. One, you know, using technology, but also, you know, getting time to interact with a class or a teacher, so that there's that type of a close education that you can get, more intimate education. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised by this. I see this all the time in corporate America, and that's why I try and remind them, hey, you know, it's important for people to actually be attentive and to teach and learn at the same time.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because when you talk about classroom learning, that is a case where you're going to see other people's faces, as opposed to the way Vince did his training with his face in a computer. So there is an element of team building there. And I'm just curious how else you would go about building a team in a place like Vince was describing there, in a department store, when it seems like people regard the people they work with as not friends, and the people that they text with on break as their friends. They're only friends.
It seems like a leadership problem and a cultural problem. So if you have a leader that, you know, it's funny, like I interviewed the former chairman and CEO of Yum Brands, David Novak, and like he's great at recognizing employees and makes a joke out of doing that. So he'll give an employee a rubber chicken or a chatterbox, and that makes people feel, you know, it's personalized, makes people feel good and recognized. And I think that in this situation, it's like making work more fun and leading by example, I think, is really important, because then the employees, you know, get to know each other, you know, and then maybe take all the employees out for lunch or do something where people feel like they're recognized, feel like they're important, and are able to talk with people on a personal level.
You do talk about the reward pathway in the brain, the dopamine pathway, that, of course, is also present in addiction. So I imagine you have to be kind of careful at using this pathway, but is recognition one of the key ways to make use of that?
Absolutely. I mean, that and just constant feedback. No one wants to wait a year for an annual performance review. People want to be recognized and given feedback on a regular basis, right? It's all about instant gratification now. And that's because of technology. You know, everyone's like, oh, what's the next tweet? What's the next Facebook message? Like, why aren't you liking my picture? Like, crazy stuff. But that's society, and that's, you know, how our brains have kind of adapted to all this tech addiction. And so I think if you give a lot of praise, as long as it's genuine, that goes a long way. And we've done research to show that the best praise has to come from your manager. That's what people want the most over any executive or CEO.
All right, so it's interesting, because when you put it this way, the performance review should not be a surprise. I mean, you should have been getting feedback all along, so nobody should be hiding anything from anybody else.
It makes everyone's life better and sets expectations, and people's performance review will just be better as a result.
So this is interesting, though. This is really straightforward, that you suggest that managers ask people when and how they like to be recognized.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious. I think this is with everything. Like, ask your employees what type of employee benefits are most useful to them. get to know them and what their individual goals are, so you can help them achieve their goals, so they're more likely to stay with you longer and help you achieve yours. I mean, why guess what people want when you can just ask them?
There you go with that face-to-face communication again, Dan.
That's what I'm here for, all about face-to-face.
So,
and in this respect, audio, right? So it's all
right.
Voice-to-voice.
Right, it is voice-to-voice, yeah, which is pretty good. You know, it's a good substitute. Part three of the book we're just going to get into now, which is about the build organization connection. Excuse me. And you talk about hiring people being important to successful teams, certainly. And there are some aspects. It's been a while since I've been hired for a job. So how is technology used to hire people now?
Oh, my God, it's overused. They, you know, recruiters want the technology to do the work for them, right? And so, you know, there's a chatbot that tells employees where they are in the recruiting process, which can be good, but, you know, it's lifeless talking to a robot trying to apply for a job. And then, you know, HR, you know, systems, they filter people out, right? And so you're just looking for people with college degrees and who look the same way. And so actually that limits diversity of ideas too. And I think that when I talked to people for the book, they said that a human has to make the final hiring decision, right? Because, you know, hire for personality, train for skill, make sure that, you know, this person has a positive attitude, they're curious, you know, they're likable. And when you do that, when you hire people who are genuinely passionate and excited about working at your company, they're just going to last longer. They're going to rub off on other employees. It's going to be a better experience for everyone. If you just hire someone, you know, because they have a great resume, it's very risky. And so I think that regardless of the technology that we see in the future, the in-person interview will always reign supreme.
There are some boxes you clearly want managers to check and aspects that they should be looking for in the employees they want to hire. But beyond that, you know, beyond the there are no red flags and I got these green flags, how much should a manager go with her gut and, you know, and just like, well, I think this person will be a good hire?
We all end up going with our gut anyways. You know, it's just like we had to hire someone who made a hiring mistake this year. But, you know, we trusted our gut, we made a partner decision, and we have to own it, right? And nothing's ever going to be perfect, and someone who might be a great worker in 6 months might not be. You just don't know exactly how it's going to play out, so you have to use your gut because you're placing a bet.
I wonder if in the process of hiring, when we talk about diversity in the workplace, if you're looking for some diversity of personality too, if there's somebody who you realize some of the attributes of how they are might actually rub some of their coworkers the wrong way initially, but that you think it'll be ultimately a pretty good disruption. Is that something you'd look for in hiring somebody for a workplace, or is that going a little too far in trying to stir things up?
I think it's all within reason. Right, you want to definitely check their references, and because your reputation's on the line if you hire the wrong person. So I think you should be conscious about that. I think differences are important, but I think shared values and shared mission is of the utmost importance, because if you're not on the same page at a foundational level, it's never going to work long term.
You know, I noticed that that it annoys a fair amount of people. We're just coming out of this election season, and it annoys some people when they look at political debates that people ask some weird questions sometimes. And I understand this as a reporter. It's because you're trying to get the politicians to give something other than that rote, rehearsed answer that they've worked on for so long. Is it advisable in a job interview to do that same sort of thing, to put some hypotheticals out there that perhaps the person hasn't considered, so they do have to think on their feet?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you want them to interview you as much as you interview them. You know, curiosity, it can't be understated, right? Someone who, you know, has done their homework, who's passionate, will be able to ask good questions. And because it's a two-way street, you know, they're choosing you as much as you're choosing them.
I want to ask about once they're on board, though, once you've hired people. I mean, as you go through the work that you do at Future Workplace and in writing these books, are there things that managers used to do even 5 or 10 years ago that you advocate them junking from their toolbox in managing people now?
Yeah, I think people have their BS meters up. I think that anytime that you use buzzwords, people are turned off. Anytime that, you know, you just say corporate speak, I think people are turned off from corporate speak. You know, there's Edelman's trust barometer every year. People trust corporations and governments and the financial sector and CEOs much less than they ever did. And so the smartest thing you can do is to be open and honest and use, you know, almost casual language and treat everyone like an adult. I think that's really important, regardless of, you know, protocol, you know, regardless of age, regardless of gender. It's treat people like adults and understand that people are people, you know, not machines. And from a worker standpoint, you never want to work like a robot or you'll be replaced by a robot. So bringing out your human instincts, your humanity in the workplace is important, but you need the leadership and the culture to support that at the same time. So it's a two-way street.
You report being an introvert yourself, Dan, and I just wonder if there, you know, other people like you in the workplace who, you know, they're okay with having some quiet time to themselves, which you do advocate in the book too, I should point out. But I mean, how hard should any manager push a worker to kind of get in with other people and socialize or just other, do things that aren't necessarily directly job related?
It's a delicate balance, of course, right? It's, you don't want to push someone too hard, but you want to encourage it. And if you're creating the right atmosphere, they'll more likely feel comfortable being themselves and talking among the group. For me, I think what needs to happen is the balance of having alone time with collaborative time. And so that's what the research says, is you need both.
All right. We have learned a lot. The book is called Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in the Age of Isolation. It's the work of Dan Schauble, partner and research director at Future Workplace. He's got two previous books as well. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good to have you.